You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. College Football Today.
This is it. The stage is set. We are set for Championship Saturday. Top four teams of the college football playoff will be named tonight. We'll know who they are. Rock and Rich Sermonello, if last night was any indication, it's going to be a great Saturday at college football.
This is why we watch and evaluate college football all season, all off season. This is something Joe and I will break down 12 months out of the year, really for this express purpose, to have an opportunity to see not only who makes the playoffs, Joe, but also who is going to be a conference champion. Let's not forget about that importance. You know, it's still a big deal to win the SEC title, to win the Big Ten title, to be crowned Big 12 champion, which we haven't had this game since the beginning of the decade. So it's a chance to get some hardware, but also by the end of the weekend, we will know the playoff matchup.
Yeah, we will. Four great games, Power 5 championships taking place. Starts at 12 o'clock with TCU and Oklahoma. Sit back, relax. Rich and I have you covered for the next 3 hours. Big show on tap at 10:24 Eastern. We'll be joined by former Georgia Bulldog wide receiver Corey Allen. We'll get Corey's take about what Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs have to do to get the upset against number 2 Auburn at 11:24 Eastern. We'll be joined by former Auburn captain Corey Barlow. We'll get Corey's take about what Gus Malzahn, Kerryon Johnson, and Jared Stidham have to do to win back-to-back against the Bulldogs. And then at 10:39 and 11:39, we'll be joined by Game Time Decisions host Gabe Morenci. We'll get Gabe's best bets for the day. Rich, though, last night, Pac-12 championship, Sam Darnold and the crew got it done 31-28 in a great game. He passed for 325 yards and two touchdowns, but David Shaw's fourth down call in that ballgame, a little disconcerting if you're a Cardinal fan.
Yeah, I mean, it was a competitive game. I thought it was a fun game to kick off the weekend, sort of the appetizer to championship weekend. Joe, this was a game that USC, I thought, had to win. You know, we look at the offseason and the summer. Many of us thought USC was going to be a playoff contender. I thought they were going to disappoint. They did with the losses to Washington State and to Notre Dame, that debacle in South Bend. So they had to get a Pac-12 championship. That was big for Clay Helton, big for Sam Darnold. I was again impressed by the running of Ronald Jones, who might be the most underrated running back in the country. He is fantastic. He really helped balance out that offense. And yeah, David Shaw, I didn't think called a great game. I wonder with Stanford, and I like the program and I like David Shaw, I wonder if they've sort of hit a plateau at this point, if this is as good as it gets to be a Pac-12 North champion.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, their fourth loss of the year. Bryce Love injured for much of that game. You brought up Ronald Jones. He did pound the rock for 140 yards last night and two rushing touchdowns. I was very impressed with the defensive front seven in very critical situations on third downs, forcing KJ Costello to beat them over the top, and he made some plays, but in the end, USC did prevail 31-28, their first Pac-12 championship since 2008. So Clay Helton and the crew got it done. Congrats to USC. When we come back, Rich and I will be talking about the big battles, also the coaching changes, and we look at the Tennessee situation up next. This is Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Studio 34.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
On College Football Today, Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello, live from Studio 34. If you want to talk college football with us, give us a call, 844-843-6879. That's 844-843-6879. You can follow me on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. You can follow Rich on Twitter at Rich Sermonello. That's C-I-R-M-I-N-L-O. IELLO. Huge day at college football, but more importantly, Rich, a huge week in college football culminated yesterday with the hiring of former Florida State head coach Jimbo Fisher taking a 10-year, $75 million contract to coach Texas A&M, and the repercussions across the college football world, just now the ripple effect across each and every program.
On many levels, too. I thought Jimbo did a bad job of handling this situation. We saw a tweet last night from DeAndre Francois, injured starting quarterback for the Seminoles, in which he, and I'm paraphrasing, he basically said, you could have said something, you could have texted us, you could have told us something. You know, Jimbo all season long, Joe, has been telling his kids after the slow start, after losing DeAndre, don't quit on this team. You know what? Remain focused. Let's fight together as brothers. Let's fight together as a singular unit. And then he just bolts. I don't mind a coach taking a job. It's a lot of money. I think there was a lot of friction within the administration and Jimbo Fisher. So to take that $75 million, go to a College Station where they have great facilities, a lot of opportunities for success, tough division in the SEC West, but to do it the way he did really bothered me, because these coaches oftentimes, they sell these kids as one unit, but when it's time to go, they simply bolt. And in terms of the ramifications, there are many, because Florida State, one of the best jobs in the country, one of the best in college football, is now open, which a lot of us did not expect a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and we'll see who they go after. You could look at Willie Taggart from Oregon, you could look at Lane Kiffin from FAU, or also now Scott Frost has to be in play. Many thought he would go to his alma mater of Nebraska, but now if money talks, does Scott Frost stay in the state of Florida should they win an AAC championship today over Memphis? We'll see who Florida State goes to. And I agree with you. We've said this before about coaches. We tell the kids to play for 60 minutes, play for four quarters. You sit in these kids' houses with their parents. I'll treat him like he's my own. And then you can't even wait till the end of the season. It's one thing to take the job, not a problem with that. I understand it's more money and you want to coach against maybe Nick Saban and Gus Malzahn and some of the better programs in college football. But Jimbo Fisher as a whole, since he won the national championship in 2013, has really slid in the opposite direction. Yeah. With top five talent in Tallahassee, that's the first comment that I want to make. And then the other is, when you recruit these kids and you beg the administration for the extra game against UL Monroe today, and then you don't even want to coach it?
Well, the one thing I'll say about that, I don't want to take Jimbo off the hot seat in this case, but I think it became common knowledge that he was leaving. Could you have put him out there in Tallahassee in front of those fans? I think it was almost a security risk for Jimbo Fisher. I don't think, in light of the fact, I mean, it's amazing the times that we live in with social media. There were actually pictures of Jimbo's Christmas tree on the front of his property. I mean, it became obvious he was leaving his home in the state of Florida to take a different job. So could you put that coach out there when the fans are obviously rabid? They're angry. I don't think he could have coached today, so I'm not going to put blame on him for that. Maybe he wanted to coach, but I think it would have been a security risk. But listen, I think the interesting factor here is I think Willie Taggart is going to be the next coach in Tallahassee. He knows the state of Florida, recruits very well in the Sunshine State. He's from that area, had success at Western Kentucky, got off to a good start at Oregon. Watch Willie Taggart go to the Seminoles. You're no longer going to have that massive buyout. And that was a big problem, too. Jimbo's contract included a $40 million buyout. So he had that university over a barrel. What if this was the beginning of a steady decline for the Seminoles? 5-6 this year. What if they started to become like an 8-9 team in the future? You had that $40 million buyout. You were stuck with this guy. So in a weird way, I think Florida State, Joe, sort of got a break. They're going to regroup, in my opinion, with Willie Taggart, which means who is going to be the next coach at Oregon if, in fact, that happens. Remember, Scott Frost also was an assistant there.
It could be. Everybody seems to feel that Scott Frost, it's a done deal, but I'm not so sure about that, especially today. If UCF beats Memphis in the conference championship, Scott Frost could be a major player for a lot of programs, especially when money talks, like I mentioned. And you mentioned Jimbo Fisher twofold. Can he win at Texas A&M is the main question. $75 million, there is no margin for error. He has two young quarterbacks. He has Kellen Mond. He has Starkel. Can this team win now? immediately. That's going to be the key question, because he's going to be having to recruit against Nick Saban, Gus Malzahn, whoever takes the Arkansas job, Ed Orgeron at LSU that has done a fantastic job there. Can he win immediately? Because if it starts out 8-5, 9-3, that's what Kevin Sumlin did. And, you know, now you're paying the guy $75 million, $7.5 million a year.
Joe, I couldn't have said it any better myself. That was my exact thought when I saw the news breaking yesterday, and then I saw the contract. And more power to him, more power to his agent. He's now the second highest paid coach in college football behind Nick Saban. But guess what? If you're the second paid highest coach, you're not going to be accepted if it's Kevin Sumlin type numbers. Kevin Sumlin was an 8-win-a-year coach, and Texas A&M made a statement when they fired Sumlin and went after Fisher that that is not acceptable. And I buy that. If you're going to pay $7.5 million a year, that means that the university expects championships. At a minimum, an SEC championship every now and again. That's a lot of pressure for Jimbo Fisher. And I also like your point about what Jimbo has done over the last couple of seasons. If you take out, and I know it's not fair, we've done this with Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M, but if you take out those couple of seasons with Jameis Winston, Jimbo Fisher is about a 9-win-a-year coach. And if that's what he's doing at Texas A&M, arguably the toughest division in the country, I don't think that's going to be acceptable. So 2 or 3 years from now, we might have Jimbo Fisher kind of a little hot under the collar as well.
I agree. And the one thing I think when you look at Florida State over the last couple of years, even though Charles Kelly led that turnaround last year, this hasn't been a dominant defense. If Texas A&M is going to get back to the old days of the Wrecking Crew, they need to play with a physicality. Now, they played much better this year, especially in run support, but he's going to have to take that defense up to another level immediately. And John Chavis was there. Let's see who he brings in as his defensive coordinator. Now, for Florida State, Odell Hagans, will the former Florida State defensive lineman, will coach this team against UL Monroe. But it's very intriguing developments throughout the nation.
Yeah, I mean, this has been, for me, you and I combined probably have about 30-plus years of college football experience in terms of covering the sport. I never can remember a week as zany from a coaching standpoint than we have had this week. I mean, we've had the Tennessee debacle, John Curry out as the athletic director. First, they make an offer to Greg Schiano. The fans go berserk on the campus, on Twitter, and then Schiano doesn't get the offer. Now, Tennessee is in a very awkward position in which they need a head coach to permanently replace Butch Jones. They've brought Phil Fulmer back to be the athletic director, but there is no head coach, and they've gone about 8 or 9 deep in terms of candidates. Where does Tennessee go at this point, and have we reached a stage, if the Volunteers are going to get a C-tier coach, if they're going to go after T. Martin, who I don't believe is ready for this job, is it time to say, you know, maybe Brady Hoke is on staff, make him the interim coach for 1 year, and then start this process over again in 2018.
Yeah, that's a great point, and we spoke about it before the show in terms of the Sandusky trial outside the whole situation. Apples to apples, if it never happened or if it was never part of the equation, because I don't want to go there in terms of where we're going with the show, but I don't think Greg Schiano was the right fit for Tennessee. I think they should have went with a young defensive coordinator. I mentioned Jeremy Pruitt. You could have went for a guy like Brett Venables, a big name D coordinator at Clemson. Why did you go with Greg Schiano, who didn't coach the team in Tampa Bay, left early? He coached Rutgers up to a certain point, but he's a Northeast guy. He's not a Southeastern Conference coach.
SEC, as you know, Joe, completely different animal. I believe to be successful in the SEC, you have to have an infrastructure. You need contacts in that area from a recruiting perspective. And you have to know what that land. It's like nothing else in the country. I don't know if the SEC is the best conference. Easily the most passionate conference. I mean, it really truly does mean more in the SEC. And if you've never coached in that conference and you're coming from the Rutgers, the Ohio State, briefly with the Buccaneers, Greg Schiano to me was a horrible choice. I think right
terrible
from the outset, it was a bad decision. Greg would not have been successful. Greg is a good coach, but to me, he's a specialist. He worked well in the state of New Jersey. He worked well where the expectations were low. To put him in Knoxville, where they've been waiting for years for even an SEC East title, I think it would have been a disaster.
I agree. He's a Big Ten coach. Let's be honest. Greg Schiano, if he does get another head coaching job, it's going to be in the Big Ten or the AAC for that type of success that you're looking for. So very intriguing week of college football, but this is what it's all about. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll dive right into the SEC championship, Georgia and Auburn. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Huge SEC championship rematch, Georgia, Auburn. Teams played 3 weeks ago, in which Auburn won on the Plains 40-17. Rich, this is an Auburn Tiger team that has won their last three SEC championship appearances by 22 points per game. The last Auburn loss in an SEC championship came in 2000 to the Florida Gators, 28-6. But I'm all in with Kirby Smart in the rematch. I think the Bulldogs get a 14-point victory later today.
I'm surprised you feel that way. I thought superstition would have taken over. and you normally do not pick your Bulldogs out of superstition.
I'm feeling strong.
I hope you're wrong, because I really like Auburn. Now, I recognize difficult to beat a good team, and Georgia's a very good football team. Difficult to beat a good team twice in a season, let alone within the course of a month. And I also recognize that Kerryon Johnson, they could say he's day-to-day, he's a game-time decision. I don't think he's going to be 100%. I really don't. I think looking at how much pain he was in with his shoulder, I don't think they're playing possum. I think the kid is not going to be 100%, which obviously impacts that Auburn offense. I don't know if Jarrett Stidham can carry more of the weight against the Georgia speed, but the reason why I like Auburn is I think they're just physically a better football team. At the line of scrimmage, and we've both watched these teams, Georgia and Auburn, a lot this year at the line of scrimmage, whether it's offensive line or defensive line with kids like Dontavius Russell, they're just better at the line of scrimmage. And Georgia's very good. Auburn is playing at an elite level. So if Kerryon Johnson is not 100%, even Cam Martin, his backup, not 100%, the way that offensive line is blocking, led by Braden Smith, I'm not saying it's plug and play, but I think even a Cam Martin can have some success, number one. And number two, regardless of the situation with Kerryon Johnson, Joe, what did we see in that first game? The inability of Georgia to run the football. Georgia has to run the ball to beat good opponents, because if they don't, it puts too much pressure on the young quarterback, Jake Fromm. And I think that's exactly what happens today in Atlanta. I think Auburn's defense is going to win the day. It'll be a much more entertaining, closer game, for sure. But I think Auburn gets an SEC championship and a playoff
game. Yeah, you bring up great points. And here's what I look at when I look at the rematch. Georgia's played very well on the road. They're 5-1 this year. And in 2016, they lost five games. Four of those opponents they played in 2017, teams like Vanderbilt, teams like Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia Tech, they won all four of those ball games, Rich, by a combined score of 166-28, or 34.5 points per game. Over the last couple games, now, Georgia's been able to run the football. They put up 381 2 weeks ago against Kentucky. They also put up 247 last week in the rivalry rematch against Georgia Tech. They won that matchup 38-7. They have eight rushing touchdowns over the last couple of games. I agree with you that Jake Fromm's going to have to make plays, but I think Georgia's very aggressive here. A couple of factors as well. When you look at the matchup against Alabama, that front seven of Auburn, even though they won that matchup by 12 points, they did allow 211 rushing yards to the Alabama Crimson Tide. Does that play a factor into this ballgame? I think it does, and I think the offensive line of Georgia gets healthy in this matchup. They win by 13.
I think if there's a factor, Joe, that concerns me about the Alabama game is that really every opponent of the Tide just gets beat up when they play Alabama. That was a very physical game. It was a very emotional game. Winning the Iron Bowl is a huge deal for Auburn or Alabama in the seasons they win. That would be a concern of mine. Not to say that you need to get up for the SEC championship game, but physically, Alabama will take you behind the woodshed. I mean, it's a 12-round fight, and that is a concern of mine. But again, I think better defense of Auburn. I think you have the better, more experienced quarterback. I've been impressed by Jarrett Stidham. He really has gotten progressively better as the season has progressed. I think Georgia's going to have a problem moving the ball. I have been so impressed by that defense of Kevin Steele. They've been fantastic. And also, one final point for me, Chip Lindsey, the offensive coordinator that Gus Malzahn brought in, did such a phenomenal. I went back and watched the game in November between these two teams. A lot of misdirection, a lot of keeping Georgia on its heels. He was really able to neutralize the speed of those linebackers, keeping them guessing. I thought he game planned very well. So even though the personnel might not be the same if Kerryon is not 100%, Chip Lindsey, I think, could outfox that Georgia defense for a second time this season.
Yeah, that's the matchup. I mean, when you look at that game 3 weeks ago, they utilized screen passes. They utilized Kerryon Johnson in the short to intermediate passing game. He was not only the leading rusher in that ballgame, but he was also the leading receiver. And that's Auburn's MO. They run you sideline to sideline, and then they strike vertically against your defense. Now, when you look at Georgia's defense overall heading into this ballgame, they're holding opposing offenses to 112 rushing yards per game and only giving up 159 passing yards to opposing quarterbacks. Jarrett Stidham will have to make plays in this rematch. Now, he's completing 68% of his passes, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, but that offensive line, Rich, still is a concern. They've allowed 27 sacks as an offensive unit, and Georgia, if they could dial up blitz packages, especially in third down situations. This is a Georgia defense that's holding opposing offenses to 33% on third down conversions. That could be the matchup for Kirby Smart and the defensive crew.
And I still think, you know, we go back to those 27 sacks. That number inflated by the Clemson game, not that we can remove it from the equation, but that was 11 sacks in that game, 16 over the rest of the season. So it's not as alarming as it looks. Again, I think in the trenches, Georgia's been good. The offensive line better than I thought. I thought in the preseason that the Georgia O-line would be the Achilles heel. Isaiah Wynn and those guys have done a good job this season, but when you match them up against Dontavius Russell, Derek Brown, Jeff Holland coming off the edge, a lot of players that average fans were not talking about back in August have really done a phenomenal job. They're big in the secondary. They're physical. I think they could neutralize a good but not great receiving core of Georgia. Listen, not as many points, not as much success for the Auburn offense. Auburn defensively will control this game. It'll be close. It'll be close into the second half. I think Auburn pulls away. They're too hot. I mean, look at what they've done over the last 3 weeks. They've beaten two top-ranked teams. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
And they've expended a lot of energy to beat Georgia. They followed that up with a win against UL Monroe and then the Iron Bowl last week. So I agree with you. This is one of the hottest teams in the country, if not the hottest team in the country. You look at Auburn from a defensive perspective. What can you say about Kevin Steele and the crew holding opposing offenses to 125 rushing yards on the ground, 177 passing yards to opposing quarterbacks, more importantly, 34 total sacks as a defensive unit and holding opposing quarterbacks to 34% on third downs. Jake Fromm will have to make plays, but I look for the tight ends to be a factor in this ballgame. Blazevic and Nauta, look for them to be aggressive early on. Now, Jake Fromm has played well. He's completed 62% of his passes, 1,990 yards, 19 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And Georgia was very aggressive against Georgia Tech on the road last week. That's another factor as well. You need to be aggressive early on to open up the running lanes for Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. I think that's what Georgia does from an offensive perspective.
And I think you can't fall behind. I mean, it sounds like a trite phrase, one we use a lot, but sure. I think this is one of those games where it's imperative for Georgia, which didn't happen in the first matchup, to be in this game early. They have to be able to utilize those backs. That's the one advantage that the Bulldogs have over the Tigers, is that deep backfield. I mean, Auburn, we thought they were going to have a deep backfield, but, you know, obviously Cam Pettway was going to be the focal point. He's out. Kerryon Johnson, less than 100%. Even Cam Martin got dinged up a little bit last week. So they don't have the same depth in the backfield, not even close, that Georgia does right now. Georgia goes even deeper than the first two. DeAndre Swift right now, Holyfield. They're very deep in the backfield. They have to be able to utilize those backs, which means getting off to a fast start, taking some early blows from Auburn and being in that game, and then being able to rely on Sony and Nick Chubb and the defense. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be entertaining, a little lower scoring than the first one, but I still see Auburn getting that SEC title. 30-20 is the final that I predict. Let me say one thing. If Georgia wins, by the way, if fans are wondering, winner of this game automatically punches a ticket. Georgia's got one, Auburn's got one, and then we start to wonder what happens to Alabama, but that's going to be dictated on other outcomes.
Correct. I think Georgia, if Georgia wins, Alabama has a chance. If Auburn wins and they win convincingly, I'm not so sure Alabama has a shoe-in based off of that scenario, but we will see. The one thing, when you look at Auburn from a road perspective, both of Auburn's losses came in Death Valley earlier in the year, 14-6 against Clemson. Later in the year, they had the 20-point lead against LSU in Death Valley, let that lead slip, 27-23. This is a game that's on turf. Auburn's not used to playing on turf. And the other factor is this, from a fan base. This game is played in Atlanta, so it'll basically be a home game for Georgia. But keep in mind this, Rich. Georgia knew they were going to the SEC championship game from a ticket perspective. Auburn didn't know, for the most part, till they won that matchup last week in the Iron Bowl, that they were going. Most of those fans probably were Alabama fans that held tickets. Are they selling those to the Auburn fans this coming Saturday?
That's an interesting point. I didn't think about that. They've had a head start. Their fans have had a head start in terms of purchasing tickets at the Mercedes-Benz. Auburn didn't know, obviously, till last weekend in their victory over Alabama. And you bring up a really good point, which is, you know, at Jordan-Hare, it was home crowd, unbelievable atmosphere. Now it's, at best, it's a neutral site, it's neutral in terms of how many fans are in the stands. So different atmosphere. I just like going with the hot team in these settings. I mean, Auburn is playing with such a level of confidence. Jarrett Stidham has become the player we thought he was going to be. And again, defense, defense, defense. Georgia is great. Auburn is some level above great. It should be a great game, but I'd be surprised if Auburn loses. I really want to see what Kerryon looks like. I'm so eager to see the start of that game to see if the kid's 100%.
Yeah, if you'll know within the first series, if he's not running full bore and he goes down after one tackle, this is a kid that brings it like a Le'Veon Bell. He's a patient runner. I think that's the success that they've had because of his running style, because you look at the offensive line, this is a kid that waits for those holes to open. So we'll see. It is a 4 o'clock kick. It is on CBS. When Rich and I come back, we'll be talking about the other conference championships. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonella live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34.
The award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network is your free fantasy source 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You can catch this show and many others live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio. Want to listen on your computer at work? Go to fntsy.com/radio or check us out on YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page, where you can ask questions, discuss topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your questions on the air. The number is 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 days a year fantasy sports network of its kind without a subscription. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your fantasy source.
We spoke about Georgia and Auburn. But there's another hot team in the nation, and they're taking place later tonight in the Big Ten Championship game. It is the Wisconsin Badgers. It is Urban Meyer and Ohio State rematch of the 2014 Big Ten Championship that Ohio State dominated 59-0. These teams played last year in the regular season. Ohio State did pick up a 30-23 overtime win in Madison. JT Barrett had surgery, cleaned out a little meniscus. I think he's ready to go, and I think the mobility of Ohio State at the quarterback position is the difference. A close, gutty 10-point win over the Badgers later today.
I really disagree. I have been an unabashed cheesehead all season long. I like this Wisconsin program. I like them more with each passing week. Give me a team that plays old-school, bare-knuckle football. They run the ball. They play great defense. No marquee names at all. A true freshman running back in Jonathan Taylor, but boy, I love this defense. And when you match up two contrasting teams, Ohio State has more blue bloods, Joe. They have more speed. They have more pedigree. They've got the better coach. But give me the team that knows how to play bare-knuckle football. Boy, that defense of Wisconsin has been fantastic all year long. JT will be fine in terms of his health. I think he'll struggle against the best pass efficiency defense in the country. I could see a couple of picks, one going back the other way. Jonathan Taylor getting some hard yards. I think Wisconsin remains undefeated, wins the Big Ten championship, and is the number four seed in the college football playoff.
Great point. I could see it going either way. The one thing I think when I break this game down in terms of the Big Ten championship game, it does come down to Wisconsin now. I watched them last week, picked against them with Minnesota, but I thought that Dimery Croft's athleticism would be the difference. The offensive line did not play well for the Golden Gophers. They were one-dimensional, put in third down and long situations, and could not stretch Wisconsin's defense vertically. Here with Ohio State, you have a much more explosive offense that's balanced. They're rushing for 250 yards on the ground with J.K. Dobbins, and they can throw it with J.T. Barrett or Haskins. They're passing for 279 yards through the air. They can utilize multiple formations. I'm not so sure it's J.T. Barrett's arm, but his legs, especially in Wildcat pistol formations, because when you look at Wisconsin's defense overall, this year they haven't faced a quarterback with the athleticism and mobility of Ohio State's crew of J.T. Barrett and Dwayne Haskins.
I think they're so gap disciplined. They're so strong in the front seven. I mean, really, every level. You don't know the names in most cases. Natrell Jamerson, Connor Sheehy, Garrett Dooley, TJ Edwards. Not household names, but I don't care. These are great college football players. I think they could string out JT Barrett. This is one of those rare cases where I don't think the speed wins. I think the physicality, the defense of Wisconsin, the offensive line has been outstanding. Much like the Georgia situation, it's incumbent upon Wisconsin to not take some quick blows, not fall down early. I don't have a ton of faith in Alex Hornibrook if it's comeback mode. Wisconsin has to play Wisconsin football. They haven't been down much at all this year. So if they go down early, I would wonder how they would react in that situation. But think about this, Joe. What team gave Ohio State the most problems this year?
Iowa.
Iowa did. And Wisconsin, to me, is a rich man's Iowa, right? I mean, the ability to run the ball between the tackles, play good, solid defense with a lot of no-name players, work off of play action. Ohio State has struggled all year long in terms of play action. So I could see Hornibrook in play action using Troy Fumagalli, his tight end, mixing in the running of Jonathan Taylor. I don't expect this to be a blowout, but I do like, forget the points. I think it's a gift to be getting 6 points with Wisconsin. Wisconsin has been doubted all year long. These kids are going to be absolutely fired up for this game. Wisconsin, in my opinion, wins it outright. Ohio State has been a little bit overrated all season long, and I think they show it again this evening in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I agree with you about Ohio State. I'm not buying Ohio State as an elite team, but I think when you break down this matchup, it does come down to matchups. And I look at Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game against Penn State last year. They struggle with the mobility of Trace McSorley, especially outside the pocket. He was able to put pressure on the perimeter of Wisconsin Clemson's defense. Different team, I understand that, but this still is Ohio State speed. Now, when you look at Ohio State from a defensive perspective, they're holding opposing offenses right in the area of about 120 rushing yards per game. They're only giving up 179 passing yards to opposing offenses, but the struggles of Wisconsin over the last five games, Rich, has been third downs for the most part. They're only averaging 150 passing yards per game over the last five games, eight touchdowns, five interceptions. Minnesota cannot put them into third down and long situations. I think Ohio State can. I think they dial up blitz packages, put the pressure on Hornibrook to beat them.
You're never going to judge Wisconsin based on passing yards. I mean, this is not a passing program.
But they need
program.
The passing attack to be successful today because they're going
to
stack the
box. They'll need to mix it up. But I don't think Hornibrook needs to throw for more than... If he throws for 180 and there's some degree of ball control, if Jonathan Taylor could make things happen on the ground, control the clock, control the tempo, play keep away. Again, not offensive line. As much as I love the Ohio State defensive line, I think Wisconsin, to some extent, can neutralize the Nick Boses, the Sam Hubbards, Tyquan Lewis. It's going to be a great matchup in the trenches, no question about it. But think about that Wisconsin defense. Eight straight games. I know they haven't played someone the caliber of Ohio State during that stretch, but eight straight games of allowing no more than 17 points. I think this is a difficult matchup for Ohio State. You know, you got JT Barrett. He's sketchy. He's up and down. He could be very iffy. And as much as they have the, you know, the blue chippers at the skill positions, they don't have a true number one running back. J.K. Dobbins has been good. Mike Weber's been good of late. But the wide receivers, too, Joe, I think they're going to have problems. There is not a true number one receiver for Ohio State this year. That, you know, one week it might be Benjamin. You know, another week it could be Paris Campbell. Good players, but not great. And again, this is the number one pass efficiency defense. I'm telling you, folks, people have doubted Wisconsin all year long. This program, this entire state, has been waiting for this opportunity to showcase what Paul Christ has done. I think it's a bit of a coming out party for people who have doubted Wisconsin.
You look like you're...
I'm getting excited. I'm starting... My face is turning the color of the Wisconsin jerseys now.
Now, do I have to remind you we both picked Minnesota last week against Wisconsin? You didn't buy them then. I'm just saying.
I was hoping you wouldn't remind.
I
thought there would be a look ahead effect, but again, that's even more of a reason to like Wisconsin. This team has a razor focus.
I agree. And Jim Leonard, the defensive coordinator, has done a fantastic job. And it will come down to third downs. You look at Wisconsin holding opposing offenses to 28% on third down conversions. Ohio State, as an offensive unit, is converting 49% of the time. If they can move the chains and, like you said, jump up early on Alex Hornibrook, could be a long day for the Wisconsin offense. I'll say this about a formation perspective. Joe Moorhead and Penn State spread Wisconsin's defense out in the second half last year. Look for the same type of game plan. It's not so much an up-tempo attack, but if they could spread the Wisconsin defense thin on the front seven, that'll open up running lanes for Dobbins, Haskins, or Barrett, and that's where I look for Ohio State to have success. Now, Ohio State rock solid in third down defense as well, holding opposing offenses to 35% on third down conversions. Wisconsin's great. They're 50% third downs as an offensive unit, but they've struggled in recent weeks in terms of consistency, and that's where I look to play out in Indianapolis a little bit later.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. You just made me think about something. Last year was demoralizing for the Badgers. That was a game they should have won. I mean, they just collapsed down the stretch. They should have been Big Ten champs. They should have been facing USC in the Rose Bowl and lost that game. I wonder if there's any kind of it's not revenge because it's a different opponent, but I wonder how Wisconsin approaches this, knowing they were so close last year before Trace McSorley just went off. I mean, they really took the top off the defense with some long balls. Wisconsin gets a shot at redemption. And again, I don't let the fan side of me come out that often. You know, my alma maters do not play FBS football, so it's not like I have a dog in the fight, but I just love the way Wisconsin prepares. They don't make mistakes. They do the little things well. They create turnovers. They'll get after the quarterback. Third down offense and third down defense, they've consistently been amongst the best in the country. They're strong at the line of scrimmage. I think that kind of a disciplined, well-coached team is going to give problems to Ohio State, which has largely been inconsistent. Again, better athletes, but inconsistent. They've had some lapses on the back end of the defense. The offensive line has been much better of late, but I think there are some vulnerabilities. So look for someone like a Garrett Dooley to have some success coming off the edge. of all the games, I think I'm interested in this one the
really?
Most. I really am, because, you know, Wisconsin, I want to see Wisconsin with an opportunity to prove it. They've heard all year long, as they've sat outside the top four, you're not good enough, you haven't played anybody, and that was true. They really haven't played anybody this season. I'm not sure how much I count, you know, Michigan and Iowa. This is their opportunity to really prove it, and that, for that reason, it fascinates me.
A lot of pressure on this team, though. A lot of pressure, yeah. Not just to win a Big Ten championship.
Yeah.
This is make it or break it for the college football playoff, because Ohio State needs help. Now, if Ohio State gets up, look for Urban Meyer to put the pedal to the metal, because style points matter. If you're Wisconsin, you're saying, let's just get through this game. If we're winning, we don't care if we win by a point. Let's just get through and become 13-0, because then they'll punch their ticket to the college football playoff. We'll see how it plays out. It's an 8 o'clock start. I think all the pressure on the Wisconsin Badgers in this ball game, and you have to give the coaching advantage to Urban Meyer and the crew.
I would, but I've given the coaching advantage to Urban Meyer quite a bit over the past year, and didn't impress against
Kirk Ferentz. I agree.
And also, I liked Ohio State. It was a week two or week three against Oklahoma. Week three against Oklahoma, because it was Lincoln Riley, and they completely collapsed. So maybe we're giving too much credit to Urban Meyer.
We'll
at this
see.
Point.
Rich likes Wisconsin. I like Ohio State. When we come back, ACC championship, the U and Clemson. Keep it where it is. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Music from our great producer, Pete Consadori. Fist pumping music, as he said.
Better than the caffeine at this point.
Well, let's fist pump it right now into our best selections. I think we're both even on the year. You mentioned that.
I think we're actually deadlocked right down to one tie.
Deadlocked on championship
Saturday. Just the way it should be.
And we're not gonna break these games down in great detail, but we'll start off with the selection. I love Clemson today. It's an 8 o'clock kick. We're gonna break it down in next hour, but I love Clemson's front seven going up against an injured Miami team and Malik Rozier later today.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's one of my best bets of the day. I just think Clemson is in championship mode right now. This team has done it before, won the last two ACC titles. Love what Mark Richt has done. I mean, the program has had a great season, but offensively, Malik Rozier has been sketchy, accuracy issues. Joe, I think they'll have problems against that Clemson defense.
Yeah, we'll see. 12 o'clock kick, Big 12 championship. Rich and I are bucking heads here. I love Gary Patterson in the rematch, 38-20. They lost to Norman. Not today, 37, TCU, Oklahoma 33.
Boy, that would be a surprise for me, only because I think Oklahoma is like a locomotive right now led by Baker Mayfield. And TCU does have the best defense in the Big 12, but where did that get them a couple of weeks ago? You referenced the Sooner victory, 38-20. Forget Baker Mayfield for a second. Rodney Anderson has been fantastic on the ground. The receivers have developed, like Marquise Brown and CeeDee Lamb. I just think too much offense for Oklahoma. More competitive this time around, but I like the Sooners.
12 o'clock kick. It's an AAC championship rematch where UCF did get the 40-13 win over Memphis and Riley Ferguson. I think they get it done as well. I love the way they're playing on the offensive side of the ball. Lead the nation in turnover margin with plus 17. To me, that's the difference. UCF, a 14-point win over Memphis.
You know, it's interesting about this game is a lot of fan bases around the country are going to be interested in this game because, you know, Scott Frost on the UCF side, Mike Norvell from Memphis, one of those gentlemen could be that fan base's head coach next year.
Both.
Yeah, exactly. These are two of the hottest young head coaches in the country. Now they go head-to-head for the second time. I like UCF as well. I just, you know, great offense. I think it'll be an entertaining game, but a significantly better defense for the Knights. That'll be the difference.
We spoke about it in the last segment. I love Urban Meyer to get a 10-point win with the Buckeyes in Indianapolis, but Rich thinks Wisconsin goes bowling in the college football playoff.
The only thing, well, two things would make this game better for me. Just from a fan's perspective, if it was not indoors, because Big Ten football games in December should be outdoors, preferably on grass. Indoors at Lucas Oil Stadium, not my favorite.
Not Big Ten football.
The other request I would have is if Joe and I could watch this game together. I mean, if Joe and I could, because I can't wait for this game. I know Joe loves Ohio State. I absolutely love Wisconsin. I think it's a showcase game for all things Badgers. That defense is going to there's good JT Barrett and bad JT Barrett. I think we see bad JT Barrett tonight against the Badger defense.
Well, that's not the game I want to watch with you front and center stage. I want to see this SEC championship game with you. My dogs and Kirby Smart in the rematch going up against Kerryon Johnson and Gus Bus.
Yeah, that would be fascinating as well. I actually like Wisconsin more than I like Auburn. I do like Auburn in that game, but Wisconsin to me is just, I think they're a sleeping giant. I hope everybody doubts this program because they're feeding off of it and they are going to be fired up against Ohio State. Little revenge factor too after the Cardale Jones blowout from what, 3 years ago?
True, 59-0. Yeah. I mean, bulletin board material for the Wisconsin Badgers. Make no mistake about it, it is an 8 o'clock kick. When Rich and I come back, we'll be diving into the Big 12 championship games along with the other conference championships. Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonella, live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34.